Domonrapvadotra Solidam chasumadhyama Janjavajato yevai Bhajanti, they devotedly serve. Abhajataha, with those who do not reciprocate with them. So bhajati and abhajato. So they serve, they do bhajan, even to those who do not reciprocate with them. Abhajato. Yevai,
those who indeed
Kuruna,
merciful.
Pitarao,
parents.
So what this verse is, it's Krishna's second response to the question of the gopis. Prabhu, could you open that door a bit? Because the gopis have asked Krishna a tricky question, asking him which is better, which are the best type of lovers or reciprocators, those who reciprocate equally according to who is dealing with them. If you love me a little bit, I will love you a little bit. If you serve me a lot, I will serve you a lot. That's one type, the reciprocators. And Krishna in the previous verse has condemned those types as, practically speaking, businessmen, business persons, that there is no actual love in the dealing. Because if one doesn't get what one wants, then one stops one's service. This is typically what's going on in the world. In India, if you have a job, they call it a service. But actually, it's not service at all. It's business. You come in, you do your work, you get some pay, you leave. If there's no pay, there's no work. So Krishna, in the previous verse, has condemned those types of lovers who are basically attempting to get more than they give. The second type of person that the gopis have asked about are those who give regardless of what they are getting. And this verse answers or responds to that type of a lover that just continuously gives regardless of what they get in return. So what we've heard so far is bhajanti abhajato yevai. Certainly those who serve bhajanti abhajanto, even though they're not getting any service in return. Karuna pitaro yata. There are two types of these. One is karuna, and what does karuna mean? Merciful. Merciful. And pitara means? The parents. Well, specifically and literally the father, but it means the parents. So there are two types of those who give. One's, the first type is one who is inherently merciful. And they have no relationship, bodily, physical relationship with the person, and yet they're giving. And then on the other hand, lower still are the pitara, the parents, who give in a very religious, detached way, just giving. But it is due to the bodily relationship. And even we see this in the religious world. People see that in some religions they're very concerned about the brotherhood of their religion and don't mind killing others who are of a different religion. How much Krishna conscious knowledge would solve so many of these horrendous problems in the world, because so many of the problems are based on bodily consciousness or upadhi or impositions of false identities upon the soul. If that was removed, then the actual brotherhood of all humanity would be established, and even greater than that, of all those who are alive, not even loving all of humankind and then killing the animals and setting up slaughterhouses, a conspiracy to kill them. No, not even that. And that is the expanse of the loving facility that the philosophy of Krishna consciousness awards. A complete expansion based of love, based on transcendental knowledge. And what is that transcendental knowledge? That we are all parts and parcels of Krishna. Mama eva angsa jiva loke jiva bhuta sanatana. That we are all Krishna. We all belong to Krishna. Not this group, not that group. And again, not even dividing the groups into humans and animals. So how great is this Krishna conscious philosophy? What to speak of when we can apply it. But even intellectually, we can understand how vast in problem-solving it is. So Prabhupada would, actually quoting from Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he would say, there is no problem in this world other than the lack of Krishna consciousness. So it's such a bold statement, and a seemingly extreme statement, or one might even say a seemingly sectarian statement, because naturally every religion thinks their path and their religion is the best, is the superlative. But just see how practical the application of the Krishna conscious philosophy actually is. If we only understood that we are eternal, that we are souls, aham bijapada pita, that we are Krishna's, we are in him, maya tateshu chapyaham, we are in Krishna, we belong to Krishna, and he is ours. How our consciousness would change, how differently we would relate to others. There would be no conception of friends and enemies, inside, outside, based on the bodily conception of life. And how would that benefit the world? Because if you look around the world, the problems everywhere are just based on this. And the solution, the problems are so often based on religious differences that the humanistic people become very strong and say the solution is to remove religion, or you can have your religion as long as you don't take it very seriously. Especially more seriously than economic development. So one problem on one side, lack of knowledge, tattva vibhrama, or fanaticism, or sectarianism, and on the other side, humanistic atheism. And both are disastrous. Why is humanistic atheism disastrous? Because if we don't understand that we are that we are eternal souls, if we don't have any understanding, if we think that this life is all in all, and especially if we take it that the purpose of life is to enjoy ourselves, then what is to stop us from doing anything we feel like doing for our own enjoyment? There is no ethics. Ethics means the applied philosophy to practical life, to practical morality. That's what ethics is. And in Krishna consciousness, we also have to be, we especially have to be careful that our ethics, the practical application of the morality and the integrity of Krishna consciousness is applied properly. The philosophy is applied properly, ethically. Otherwise, what will people say? All talk, hypocrisy, on and on like that. So very, very, very careful. And what the Bhagavatam teaches is Dharma Projita Kaita Vatra Paramo Namatsaranam Satam. Projita means all removing all hypocrisy, all deceitfulness from religious practices. Very, very strong. Very heavy actually. And what is deceitfulness? In religious practice, it is self-centeredness, selfishness. And what is true religious practice? It is love for Krishna, prema pamarto mahan. So, dharma projita kaitava. Kaitava means cheating. So the Bhagavatam is to bring us to the highest platform of non-cheating religion. And the perfection of non-cheating religion, of non-selfish religion, is exactly what we're hearing right now. Exactly what we're hearing right now. It is the resonance of Vrindavan. It is specifically and ultimately the Braja Gopis who don't care for anything other than the pleasure of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Sri Bhagavan, Sri Krishna. They don't care for anything other than his pleasure. That is the perfection of religion. So many other forms of religion that even institutionalized selfishness, that I'm doing this, but who is actually the center? It's me, what I'm going to get. It's me who's the center. It's materialistic. As long as we keep ourselves in the center, it is materialism. Spiritual life, in fact, begins with sharanagati, with surrender. Surrender means accepting the reality of who we are as Krishna's servants, placing Krishna in the center. Very, very, very deep, and it cuts to the root of our material existence. And if we don't come to that point, like when one, has anyone had the experience of cutting bamboo? What happens when you cut bamboo at the near the earth? Oh, does it grow back again? This is described in, even in the Bhagavatam. as comparing it to the process of jnana, when the Sukadeva Goswami answers the question of Maharaj Parikshit about the process of atonement, and he says jnana. If you get knowledge, then that will remove all the sinful reactions, just like cutting down bamboo. But the problem is that unless the root is removed, the root of the bamboo and the root of our material existence, the very core of the materialism in our consciousness, unless that is removed, then what? Then nothing. Nothing ultimately happens, except we get closer and closer, we get purified and closer to that point of placing Krishna in the center, which is the prerequisite for loving Krishna. This is love, prema pamartoma, and this is religion. And the gopis, how ironic, look what they're doing. They're dancing with Krishna in the middle of the night, married, unmarried girls dancing with unmarried Krishna in the middle of the night. Clearly unethical, clearly immoral, superficially. But actually, it is the perfection of religion performed by the perfect religionists, the most perfect religionists, the Braja Gopis, who are fully in love with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. They have given themselves to Him completely. This is the perfection of religion. This is the highest ecstasy. And by doing this, the tiny, insignificant soul, if one is tiny and insignificant, what capacity does one have? Only a tiny and insignificant capacity. Capacity to do what? To do anything. To do something in the world, a tiny insignificant soul can only do tiny and insignificant things. A tiny and insignificant soul can only enjoy on a tiny insignificant level. But when one links himself, and that's what yoga means, and bhakti yoga means to link oneself to the Supreme through devotional service, seva, service, not just devotional meditation, but devotional service. When one's link is like that, then one's capacity for ecstasy increases to the capacity of the person we're linked to. Just like if we're linked, if we put our finger in the, and not that we recommend this, in the electrical box. What's the capacity of a little box of, especially upstairs at this point, there's not very much capacity for it to deliver electricity. But because that little box is ultimately linked through wires to the generator somewhere that's generating thousands and thousands of volts of electricity, it can do so many things. So when we link ourselves, bhakti yoga manasi, when we link ourselves to the process of bhakti yoga, to the Supreme, our capacity becomes that of the Supreme. It becomes unlimited, practically speaking. The ecstasy that one can experience is unlimited. And even in the fourth chapter of Chaitanya Charitamrita, Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami Maharaj says that Krishna says this actually, that those who think that the lover and the beloved enjoy equally, they do not understand Braja. Because in Braja, the servants of Krishna, so mysterious, the servants of Krishna enjoy more than Krishna. Now how is that possible? It's possible
because this is what Krishna wants. This is just what Krishna wants. This is the Supreme Personality of Godhead's desire, because He is the greatest of lovers. Or the greatest of beloveds. Balava means beloved. He is the greatest of beloveds, the objects of love. He is not a cold dictator monarch sitting on the throne just taking everyone's service, and if they don't serve him and do what they want, the thunderbolt, the piano falls on the head. No, he is Bhaktivatsal. He is the lover of his devotees, and the lover always wants the beloved the best for the beloved, and that is what Krishna wants. And yet, look what he's done with the Braja Gopis, and that's what they're in their transcendental ecstatic move. That's what they're complaining about by asking this question: Krishna, you left us. We came to you, giving up everything, and you don't appear to be before us. When our hearts are completely open and given to you, you leave us. How could you do such a thing? Is this proper reciprocation? This is their question. And then they want to get Krishna to admit that he's done something improper. By asking him a question, they want him to, what's the right word? You could say fall into their trap, or confess, or incriminate himself. That's the right word. Incriminate himself. Give the evidence himself from his own mouth that will prove the impropriety of his own action. So he's condemned those who only reciprocate equally. That is not love, that is business. But now he's saying something different about those who give and give and give. That was the second question. So, two different types of those who give and give. The Karuna, the merciful, and the Pitara, the parents. Dhammo nirapavo atra. Did we read that? No. Okay. Dhammo nirapavado. So dhamma means religious. Religious duty. Nirapavado means faultless. This kind of person, who doesn't reciprocate in this way, but his heart is overflowing and giving. Dharma nirapavado. This is faultless, perfect religion. He's criticized the ones who are just giving according to what they get. But these kind of people, in two categories. What is the first and primary category? And the second?
Parents.
Both just give. These are performing faultless religion. Because why? It is unselfish. Because it's selfishness. It's a common... No one likes someone who's very self-centered and selfish. Always thinking about themselves and always taking from themselves. Not concerned about others. No one likes such a person. And worst of all, even the person who is like that doesn't like himself. Because the more we become self-centered, the less we feel satisfied. Because it is unnatural to be selfish. What's natural is to give, because everyone is longing for love. That's what's natural. So dhamma nirapavado tra suridam friendship
Cha
and
Sumadhyama, O slender waisted ones, he's speaking to the gopis. And that doesn't mean that they're wasted because they haven't eaten, and that's and therefore they're slender because of that. No, it means madhyam, the middle of their body is very thin. He's speaking to the gopis in that way. So here is the translation. If you would look at this verse right now, would you be able, without looking at the, oh, the English is right there. If you didn't look at the English, would you be able to explain it just looking at the Sanskrit or understand it? Just from what we spoke about? Raise your hand if you think you would, just simply and honestly. Basically, not... Yeah. But Janti, because actually when Prabhupada... he wanted the Bhagavatam class, amazingly enough, he wanted us to actually learn the verses in Sanskrit and be able to understand them, explain them, and memorize them. How serious one would have to be to actually do that. One would have to take it in very deeply, and probably one would have to think about it during the day. That would be a good thing. So bhajanti abhajato ye vai karuna pitaro yata domo nara pavado tra suridam cha sumadhyama. My dear slender waisted gopis, which part is slender waisted gopis? Sumadhyama. Some people are generally merciful. Which part is that? Huh? Karuna. Yes. And then like parents, naturally affectionate. Such persons who devotedly serve even those who fail to reciprocate with them. So which one is, which part of the verse is those who fail to reciprocate? Yes. Bhajanti, you are worshipping, you are serving, abhajato yevai. And no reciprocation. Those type of persons who serve in that mood are following the true faultless path of religion, which is the true Dharma nirapavado atra. This is faultless, perfect religious principle. And they are true well-wishers. Where is the true? We didn't mention that. Where is the true well-wisher? Sodidam. Friends. They are true friends. That is the, a friend in need is a friend indeed. A friend who just, the business friendship, that is not true friendship, because as soon as there is no profit, there is no friend. If there is nothing in it for them, there is nothing. They are not there. My dear slender-waisted gopis, some people are genuinely merciful. So this is the second type of lover. So Krishna is actually glorifying this type. They are generally merciful, genuinely merciful, or like parents, naturally affectionate. That's karuna or pitarao. Such persons who are devotedly serve even those who fail to reciprocate with them are following the true faultless path of religion. And they are true well-wishers. They are truly suridam. They are true friends. Now, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has offered some comments on this verse. And the thing that I most remember from his comment is that he has an interesting meaning of sumadhyam. Because sumadhyam means slender waisted. And the waist, madhyam also means what? We say madhyam adhikar.
Middle.
So madhyam is middle. So Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains that the middle of the questions that they have asked is the superior one. That is the superior one. Not those who are doing business. That is not the superior lover. And nor is the one who is nirapeksha or neutral, who doesn't reciprocate at all. That is not the superior position, but the person who is giving and giving and giving. The merciful ones, the parents. That is highest. That is the meaning of middle. And also, it indicates, as Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains, that the gopis are the most glorious lovers of Krishna, because Krishna called them out in the middle of the night, and they gave up everything. They left their families, their children, their husbands, their possessions, their fathers and mothers. They left everything very dangerously to come to him. And how did Krishna reciprocate with them? By leaving. He said, thank you very much for coming out into the forest in the middle of the night, which is full of dangerous animals such as tigers and snakes. Thank you very much. Certainly you've come out to enjoy the scenery. Now I think you should go home again. What a reciprocation. Now Krishna is going to explain quite soon, just in two verses, why he's done that. But as a prelude to his explanation, he's hinting at it over here, says Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, that you, O gopis, perform the perfection of faultless religion, because your love for me is not in the slightest way based on how I'm reciprocating with you. It is faultless. It is perfect. It itself is its own reward. Because you truly know how to love. You just want to give. You just want to please your beloved. You are completely devoid of any selfishness. So Krishna is hinting the specific glories of the gopis. Now, just for a moment, think about the path of religion or spirituality that you are all on, that we are all on. This is the path of pure, unmotivated devotional service. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said it is the path of Gopi Bharta Parakamalayor Dasa Dasana Das, the servant of the servant of the servants of those who is the master of the gopis. In other words, serving in this mood. This is the path. And then think where you are situated on that path. At least I can answer for myself. It is just simply embarrassment when one thinks in that way. Just business, just business. What are the two businesses that we want? And why do we perform Krishna consciousness, either subtly or grossly? Jnana karma anavrita, or jnana karma. I want some benefit on the material level, and as soon as Krishna is not giving me that benefit, what am I doing here? If I'm not getting what I wanted, what am I doing here? Krishna explains in the Bhagavad Gita, Jana Sukritino Arjuna, that pious people approach him. In what way? What are the four types? Chator Vita Bhajante Mam, Jana Sukritino Arjuna, Artha Gigyas Artha Ti Jani, Jani Chabarata Sabha. Those who are in distress, those who want wealth, those who are curious, those who want some knowledge. These are all called Sakam devotees, Sakam bhaktis. They have desires. But yet they're pious and they approach Krishna. And Krishna says, welcome, come on this path, come on this path. But then very soon, the dream, the idealistic dream that we have, that Krishna consciousness is always going to be galabjamins only. You know, everything is only sweet and fun and chanting, and everything's sweet. No one gets old, no one gets sick, everyone's happy all the time. Every marriage is perfect, every this is like that. You join, you get a good job. Woo! Whatever happens, you stay healthy, everything perfect. That's all distress removed. Your curiosity satisfied. Whatever. And then very quickly, when Krishna desires, because we're walking on this false road, and suddenly Krishna pulls the carpet, and you end up with a sore nose or something. And you think, what have I done? What have I started chanting Hare Krishna? What is this? It's not what I wanted. Yes, it's true that it's not what we wanted, because we didn't want this. We didn't want Gopi Bharta Pada Kamalayo and Dasa Dasa and Das. We wanted Arti Gikyasa Artati. Generally, not knowledge, not the jnani part so much. And not so much the curiosity even, but it's mostly the freedom from distress or wanting something, some material benefit. Pious. But Krishna, when one has some sincerity and has that piety, Krishna wants to give so much more than those things. He wants to give, as we'll find out later on, he wants to give himself to the devotee. But it can't be done as long as our desires are so mixed. So very embarrassing, this is what I find. Very embarrassing. Which is when one turns on the light in one's consciousness and see how dirty and full of cobwebs and soot and so much dirt, big horrible things and little monsters lurking here and there, and big monsters even. And we start hitting, and you start cleaning, and what happened? The first thing you have to do before cleaning is you turn on the light, and then you see what a mess the whole thing is, and you start cleaning, and then, oh. And then you clean and clean and clean, and you get to the point of the real, the ultimate problem. The ultimate problem isn't that I want some money or I want some security, I don't want to be distressed. The ultimate problem is not on that level, it's much worse. It's enmity to Krishna. There's envy at the root. Krishna bhule se jeev anadi bahimuk. That I don't want to give myself to Krishna and be a servant. I want everyone to serve me. I want everyone to serve me. Especially the gopis. This is the root. Enmity with Krishna. Envy. And the cure for this, therefore, Kapila Muni explains that Bhakti Yoga alone gets to the root of the problem and dissolves the subtle body, the false ego. because it begins with saying, okay, Krishna, I'm yours. You can handle me roughly by your embrace. You can make me brokenhearted by not being present before me. You can make me poverty-stricken. You can fill me with distress. You can punish me for every wrong thing I've ever done. And my only request is that you allow me to serve you. This is the mood of the pure devotees. Read the songs of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. He says, let me take birth after birth according to my past deeds. Mahaprabhu says this, Janmani Janmani Shri Bhavatad Bhakti Aitikitai. Let me take birth after birth, but I have one request. Even if I'm born as a bug, an insignificant insect, at least let me be born in the house of a devotee. Because devotees, he's saying, are always chanting Krishna's holy names, and I'll be able to hear that sound vibration. So see, just try to get a, we should try to glimpse what true devotees, deep devotees, perceive as valuable and what is worthy of attaining and inconsequential. So just imagine the sweetness they must be experiencing by hearing Krishna's names from the mouth of a pure devotee to make them think like this. Because you cannot bluff it. Bluffing it means, you know, keeping the outside one thing. So we can say, yes, Krishna, whatever you want, put me in any position. But here's my list of what is it? Conditions apply. And the fine print is like. This is actually Krishna consciousness. And this is actually the most wonderful thing. And this is faultless religion. Why is it so unappealing in one sense nowadays? It's because everyone is brought up in a very self-centered way in Kali Yuga, more and more materialistic, more and more selfish, more and more just thinking of myself, and not only and the duty, even the concept of duty, doing something just because it's the right thing to be done, because it's my duty. That is going, gone. Parents don't have a dutiful mood towards their children or going more in that direction. What to speak of children having a dutiful mood towards their parents. The children nowadays sit back and think, you know, my parents haven't done this for me, and they haven't done this for me, and they haven't done this for me, they haven't done this for me. I'm a victim of everything. As if the whole universe owes us so much. This is the same type of faulty consciousness. The universe owes me so much. And then when the universe doesn't center itself around me and my desires, I'm furious. Something's wrong with this universe. But actually, of course, the universe is fine. It's me where the problem is. And the problem is my selfishness and self-centeredness and not understanding what life is, even material life, what to speak of spiritual life. That's where the problem is. And the more and more technological advancement and economic advancement, the further people get from reality, the more miserable they become, because the universe is never going to cooperate with them. And the more they want it, so what do? They just make these silly computer games where they're the one, you know, they're the center and they're knocking out everyone and they can control everything, but it's just illusion. They create an illusion, that's all. So to bring us to the point of reality, to bring us to the point of reality, on the path of reality, the Bhagavatam is here. And of course, again, we're in the 10th canto, which is where the perfection of faultless religion is being described. How fortunate we are to even get a glimpse of this concept, because when one has an understanding of what the goal is and what perfection is, at least there is a hope. And at least one can hope for mercy. And even if one finds oneself so far from this point, then one can become humble. And if one can become humble, then one can take shelter of something worthy. Hari Bol, long time no see. You okay?
Yeah.
Good. What, you're going to school now, obviously. What year of school are you in?
8.
Very good. That means you're 13? 12?
14.
Hari Bol. When Malik is gone, we can say, I remember when she was only this big. But then, people remember, or some people might remember, when I was only that big too. Yes, and one day she's going to be 60. And one day, I'm going to, if I'm lucky, I'm going to be 70. And then one day, it'll be time to leave. And then maybe, through my selfish endeavors, self-centered endeavors, I've accumulated a house and a this and a that and a this and a that and a this and a that and a this and a that, and I'll have to leave every bit of it behind. And don't think it's not going to happen. It's just a matter of time. So we should be intelligent and proceed down this path in a very intelligent and knowledgeable way. Unless we have knowledge, transcendental knowledge, we will not be able to understand what is going on, practically speaking. We won't understand the process. We won't understand. We won't even understand the difference between what's good and what's bad, what's favorable and unfavorable. So we should hear the Bhagavatam. We should chant Hare Krishna proper. And we should hear the Bhagavatam very carefully and deeply, try to understand it. And we should hold the emblem of the gopis, or the mood of the gopis. We should hold that, the mood of Srimati Radharani, the topmost of the gopis, in the highest esteem, upon our heads, their lotus feet upon our heads. The highest, the most wonderful things, perhaps so distant, love that we can't imagine, practically we can't even glimpse, but yet we should hold it upon our heads as the most wonderful thing, because as we'll hear, it is so pure, it is so perfected, it is so extreme in its placing Krishna in the center that it conquers the unconquerable Lord. it conquers Krishna. What could be more powerful than that? Not that one wants. It is so powerful that when there is a conflict between the ecstasy the servants of Krishna are experiencing and the service itself, they choose the service every time and push the ecstasy away. They don't want it because they're only interested in serving. This is purity. The ecstasy naturally follows. Everything follows, but we can't want the everything and the extras, otherwise it will never come. So what we want to develop again is prema pramartama. We want to develop love, devotion, seva, devotional service. That is what we want. This is the most intimate part of the Bhagavatam. Thank you very much, Hare Krishna. Any questions or comments? Mahatma Prabhu, you must have a question.
We have to turn the lights on.
Excuse me?
We have to turn the lights on, take a scrub and start cleaning the heart.
Oh, too much work. It's too hard. But Prabhupada puts that example in the Bhagavad Gita of the sparrow who wants to dry up the ocean. You know that example? Did you ask them to explain that in one of your classes? Isn't that one of the questions?
Not yet.
Yeah. What's the example? Okay, so Prabhu. What happened? Because what hope does a sparrow with its little beak have to empty the ocean? The sparrow wanted her eggs back. The ocean with its waves had taken away the eggs. The sparrow wanted him back, and impossible as it was, she was determined and going back, picking up a drop of water, going back, picking up a drop of water. And eventually her determined, sincere effort attracted Garuda to say, excuse me, if you don't, my dear ocean, if you don't return the eggs, I'm going to take up the task of the ocean myself. And the ocean was fearful and brought back the eggs. So how to attract the mercy from above. And this is what we should consider. How to attract the mercy of Krishna. How to attract that. Otherwise, how do we attract that? So, think about that. Any other questions or comments? Yes.
You mentioned about the example of the bamboo and how
Menugulam.
Cutting is the process of the Gyanis. It doesn't work.
It doesn't work.
But sometimes devotees experience the same thing where they feel they're making progress in Krishna consciousness, but then the same material desires come back again, just like the bamboo shoots.
Yes.
So they then think that the process of devotional service is not working.
Yes.
Does that mean that we can assume that the process of devotional service does work?
Yes.
Does that mean that they're attempting, say, instead of following the process of bhakti, they're following a jnana process, or they're just...
There can be many reasons. One is perhaps we don't follow the process of bhakti properly. A second reason may be that Krishna wants something from us. And the first thing he's always going to want is some humility. And this is what I've seen, at least in myself, that this false ego is very, very, very strong. It's very deeply ingrained. It's solid, rock hard. So what does Krishna have to do to me to make me a humble soul, to understand that I'm actually, in fact, dependent upon him? So sometimes Krishna acts in that way. Sometimes we're not trying on our own in a sense, serious way. Like the famous, not to point out only Saint Augustine, at least he made it to be a saint. There is, when he first became converted, in his confessions he describes how he had a girlfriend at that time. They had girlfriends even back then. But he prayed, "Oh Lord, please take me, but not yet." So we want to go in that direction, but we want to hold on to this too at the same time. So there can be many reasons. So just like if someone's not feeling well, you go to a doctor and he knows the symptoms, what the symptoms mean, how the symptoms indicate the problem. So we get prescribed to us. But if one wanted to take a general cure for all material diseases, one should attentively and offensively chant Krishna's holy names in japa and in kirtan. Avoid criticizing devotees, offending devotees, and attentively chant Krishna's names. And that will build up the immunity system. That will remove so much. Because when one chants attentively, or when one doesn't chant attentively, it's the difference between night and day. At least that's my experience. Unfortunately, there's a lot of night I experience to make it clearer what the day is like. But it's night and day different. So we should keep coming back to offenselessly chanting Krishna's holy names, because Mahaprabhu has said, Nasteva, 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 Gatinyanta. And if one can't do that, I know someone fairly recently told me that I just can't do it. Can I just serve the devotees? And the answer is yes. Become a humble servant if you can't do anything else. And ask, humble servant, just how can I please you? Be in that mood. But if we chant Hare Krishna, that should increase. That mood should increase. But I told her, no, you have to chant anyway. Yes. Not only by doing devotional service, by chanting one of Krishna's names, it's all gone.
What is the depth inside that the sins are eradicated?
Excuse me?
What is the
depth? How deeply?
Yeah, what is the depth? What is the deep reason that even the sins are eradicated by chanting the holy name? And
sinful reactions.
Yeah.
Yeah. Why? It's like asking, why does all the darkness go when the sun arises in the morning? Why? Because Krishna Surya Sam Maya Haya Andhakar. When the sun of Krishna arises, this is the result. But I don't think you should be disappointed. You should be happy. But don't take advantage of Krishna's kindness, because that's namno baladyasi papabuddhi navidyutetasya marishvati. But Krishna is so kind. He's so merciful. He wants us to come to Him. He doesn't want us to suffer. But we're very determined, it seems, that we want to stay covered. We want to stay with our back turned to Krishna. You should fall up instead.
So probably how 16 rounds is going to save us? Because at that time if 64...
But if you really feel like that, you should chant 64 rounds. No one is stopping you. But when you chant your 16 rounds, chant them offenselessly. And that will have so much effect. Because Prabhupada originally said the devotees should chant 32. People say 64, but I read somewhere where he said 32. But the devotees couldn't do it because they're busy. You're working? Still looking. So you should chant a little extra. We have so much passion in us. Very difficult to sit, because that's perhaps 8 hours, 5 to 8 hours in a day. Very difficult for people who have a lot of energy. That. So if you can do it, when Prabhupada said he never said you should only chant 16 rounds a day. He said you should chant a minimum of 16 rounds a day. But if you read Prabhupada's books, you'll find that the actual solution to materialistic life and a material mind is constant chanting. Kirtaniya sadhari. Constant chanting. So that is what we should work for. So if you can chant 64 rounds a day, if you can chant 128 rounds a day, or very, very, very good. But at least chant 16 rounds a day and try to make those without offenses. And try to be attentive and don't criticize devotees. So at least do that. Even a long journey begins with a first step. So take that step and do it properly. One time, one devotee came when the Bombay temple was just being built. One devotee just came from there to Vrindavan. And Prabhupada was in Vrindavan. And Prabhupada said, "So how are things going in the Bombay temple?" And the devotee didn't know what to say exactly. So he thought he'd show that he had a very discriminating eye. So he said to Prabhupada, "Things are going okay, but things aren't clean as they should be, and the devotees are like sleeping too much or something like that." He was just trying to say something. And Prabhupada replied, "That means they're not chanting their 16 rounds." And then the devotee became frightened because he didn't want to say that the devotees weren't chanting their rounds. So he said, no, Prabhupada, they are chanting their rounds, but it's just not as clean as it should be, and this and that, and this and that. And Prabhupada said, that means they are not chanting their 16 rounds. Because that means the light isn't on. Or we could also say, well, that means they're not chanting attentively their rounds. Because when the light is on, it's on. And it makes a big difference. And then uncleanliness and these things become intolerable. Just when your room is very, 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 very dirty and the light is off, then there's no problem. But as soon as you turn the light on, you can't tolerate it anymore. Okay, thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Prabhupada Ki Jai. So Krishna willing, we'll continue with the third one tomorrow.